Hi, this is Ezra. You're listening to Two Queers, Five Books, an outgrowth of another podcast called Two Queers, Four Questions. In this one, Agnes and I are learning the weekly Torah portion and finding out what there is to say about it, uncovering its queer side. I wanted to mention, which I haven't before, that the text of these episodes can be found at tumblr.com/2q5b. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for learning with us. Hope you enjoy. Okay, Parshat Vayakhel, in five parts. Aleph. In my early teens, I wore a Gold Star of David necklace at all times, which my grandfather gave me. It wasn't an heirloom. It was new and shiny. For me, it was a symbol of my connection to my grandfather and to Judaism. It was also, on one level, a symbol of the State of Israel. And that was fine with me. Throughout my teenage years, I subscribed to a fairly uncomplicated Zionism. I understood the State of Israel to be necessary for Jewish survival, and I didn't look much into the details. The concept of Israel was just one of the notes in the stately concerto of American Jewish life. My necklace was very dear to me. My grandfather was old and had narrowly escaped the Holocaust. I no longer have the necklace. I misplaced it at some point in my teens. My shame and dismay at losing the necklace was overwhelming. I didn't mention it to anyone. I just privately carried my sense of myself as a fuck-up who loses important things, who didn't deserve jewelry. Instead of the necklace, I wore the shame of having lost the necklace, under my shirt, over my heart. But I also knew that it was just a piece of gold jewelry, nothing more. Bet. Our parsha this week is largely a description of the building of the Mishkan, the portable sanctuary in which God has promised to dwell, the ritual center of the first Jewish community, the group of escaped slaves walking through the wilderness on their way to a promised land. The meticulous instructions were already given in a previous parsha weeks ago, but now they are carried out in just as meticulous detail, every necessary action reiterated, but this time in the past tense instead of the future tense. Every generation of this book's readers asks the same question. Why this repetition? It is almost comical. The most detailed and, let's be honest, boring description of anything in the Bible. And it's all repeated a second time? But Gertrude Stein comes to mind. There is no such thing as repetition, she wrote. Only insistence. And each insistence is its own. Each insistence comes at a different time in an altered context. The contextual change between the instructions for the Mishkan in Parshat Truma and the building of the Mishkan in Parshat Vayakhel is earth-shattering. In between the two, the Israelites build and worship an idol, the golden calf, the people's first collective sin. Moses intercedes with our infuriated God and obtains communal divine forgiveness. He goes back up the mountain and encounters God even more intimately and intensely. Some new relationship between God and the people has been established, but the Israelites are reeling from shame. Can the national spiritual mission really just continue as if nothing has happened? Our parsha is not a repetition of the details of the Mishkan, but an insistence. We have failed tremendously, in some ways irreparably, and yet the work we have to do is still not done. The work of building a home for God in the physical world. Gimel. Never in my life have I seen the Jewish people so deeply morally degraded as we are now. Israel has responded to the horrific October Hamas attacks with months of overwhelming violence and destruction, killing tens of thousands of people with no clear positive result. Opportunities to bring hostages home safely in exchange for a ceasefire have been repeatedly refused. I do not absolve Hamas for the atrocities they've committed. Neither can I excuse Israel's atrocities, far greater in scope and human impact. We are watching some of the most terrible humanitarian crimes ever committed by Jews in Jewish history. This is a spiritual crisis for the Jewish people. It involves us all, whether we like it or not. The monstrous acts in Gaza are grievous sins of the Jewish collective. But these sins, they're being committed by the State of Israel. Jews are not the same entity as the State of Israel. The distinction is crucial, and it must be crystal clear. The tendency to equate all Jews with the State of Israel can and does cause deadly anti-Semitism. And there has been an enormous uprising of Jewish dissent against the State of Israel's ongoing moral travesties. And yet, the symbol I wore on a gold chain over my heart as a teenager is also on the tanks that roll through Gaza, killing civilians and destroying their homes. Dalet. Jewelry is a mysteriously persistent motif in this part of the Book of Exodus. The golden calf is built with contributions of jewelry. Gold earrings are melted down to build the idol. After the people are punished, jewelry appears again. God tells Moses that the Israelites will still go to the promised land, but God will not go there with them. This is when the enormity of their sin really seems to register with the people. Vayishma ha'am et hadavar ha'ra hazeh vayit'abalu v'lo shatu ish edyo alav. When the people heard this terrible thing, they went into mourning, and no one wore his jewelry. Jewelry is emphasized in three successive verses. Next, God commands them not to wear the jewelry, though they've already removed it. And then the situation is grimly, insistently summarized. The children of Israel stripped themselves, vayinatzlu, of their jewelry. This is the same word that was repeatedly used to describe the Israelites' acquisition of the wealth of their enslavers in Egypt. Some legitimate splendor has been lost. The jewelry they once deserved and triumphantly wore has become unacceptable. They've given up any claim to splendor, to a narrative of beauty and victory. They've chosen the path of disgrace, and now they can see it. They feel like fuck-ups who don't deserve jewelry. There is a well-known Midrashic tradition that women did not participate in the golden calf. It's based on two verses in the golden calf narrative. First, Aaron asks the people to give him the gold earrings in the ears of their wives and children. But the next verse says that they, quote, broke off the gold rings that were in their own ears and brought them to Aaron. Aaron addressed only the men, and they gave the rings from their own ears, not their wives. The Midrash hears this as female refusal to participate. In contrast, this week's Parsha has an unusual emphasis on female participation. In the narrative of the communal contribution to building the Mishkan, women are specifically mentioned four times, and the first thing that they contribute is their jewelry. Vayavohu ha'anashim al ha'nashim, kol nediv lev heviyu chach vanezem v'taba'at v'chumaz, kol kli zahav. The men came in addition to the women. Anyone whose heart moved them brought brooches, earrings, rings, and pendants, gold objects of all kinds. Rashi, commenting on this verse, cites the Talmud, which identifies the last item, pendants, chumaz, as referring to gold jewelry women wore on their private parts. They even gave their clit rings to make a home for God. It's not the jewelry, then, that God rejects. Not the gold. It's that you can't decorate yourself in gold if you're going to spit in God's face. It is an insult to wear a Star of David while you're murdering the poor. Such a symbol becomes a disgrace. In contrast, the clit ring of a righteous woman is welcomed as part of the glorification of the Holy One on earth. Hey, it is my practice to pray once a day. There are 3 daily prayer services, but I pray just one each day, whichever one I am able to. I talk to God, the infinity that causes existence, as if we knew each other. Weekday prayer always includes prayers for forgiveness for sin, most of which are spoken in the first person plural. Slach lanu avinu ki chatanu, we say. Forgive us, our Father, because we have sinned. No matter how much the state of Israel is on my mind these days when I think of Jewish sins, the prayer is not, they have sinned. It is, we have sinned. Praying for forgiveness collectively as a unified people means that I can't ignore the worst actions of my fellow Jews. I cannot dissociate from those actions or fully disown them. The consequences of those actions implicate me. They demand some response. After the golden calf crisis, Moses' first act of leadership, the first verb ascribed to him is the name of our parsha, Vayakhel. Vayakhel Moshe et kol adat bnei Yisrael vayomer alehem eile hadvarim asher tziva Hashem lasot otam. Moses then congregated, Vayakhel, the whole Israelite community, and said to them, these are the things that Hashem has commanded you to do. Vayakhel, he congregated them. The word is from kahal, community. He treated the people as a single entity. He didn't divide the Israelites into those who sinned and those who abstained. What they needed to move forward after a disastrous national failure was to think of themselves as one group, with important work ahead of them. They are told to observe Shabbat, and then they are asked to contribute gifts to the building of the Mishkan. Not everyone committed the sin, but everyone is called on to heal it. Living my comfortable American life, reading the news, seeing the images of mass starvation, bodies blown apart, neighborhoods turned to rubble, I have felt so powerless to respond. But this is incorrect. Being powerless to prevent destruction is very different than being powerless to respond to it. The Jewish people have the work of rebuilding ahead of us, the work of healing the damage we have done. Everyone is invited to contribute to that healing, anyone whose heart moves them.